Welcome, everyone, to a special interview with an interesting guest whose story is both fascinating and, in many ways, rather concerning. For those who know little of the true excitement and despair of the cryptocurrency space, we're hoping that this interview will shed some light. Our guest has agreed to be financially transparent, and as a result, he's asked that he remain anonymous. So for the purpose of this interview, I will be addressing him as Charlie. Charlie is a Canadian under the age of 25 without any post-secondary education or any formal training in the field of finance or economics, whose last employment was a humble position at a grocery store. Despite this, in May of 2021, the very time of the recording of this interview, and just for the record, this is May the 14th, Charlie had acquired in total a net sum of roughly $1 million worth of cryptocurrency. But how I met Charlie tells a bit of a different story. Browsing some online forums discussing crypto, his post sounded like a man devastated about the reality of what the cryptocurrency space has become. I would like to just point out here a short excerpt from a post that he made recently, just 3 days ago, that caught my attention. The title of the post is Pump and Dumps, Becoming Ingrained in the Culture of the Youth. You guys have probably heard of the recent meme shitcoin craze that's been going on for months now. Someone creates a shitcoin, people ape in thinking they're early, they try to push the price up as high as possible before cashing out, or insane profits, millionaire in a week, and all that. Post goes on, but I just want to read a little bit in the end here. He says, lots of people are already getting burned hard. So many people are out there who have lost their life savings and are quite vocal about it, but no one listens to them. Nobody cares. The dream of being that guy who made $1 million off Doge or Shiba is much more appealing to focus on. There's no morals keeping people from doing this either. The people around them actively encourage and promote this behavior, so why wouldn't they participate? So Charlie, I want to thank you very much for speaking about this. It's pretty obvious that you have a very deep and emotional perspective on this. So yeah, thank you for agreeing to share your insight here.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me.
I really want to help people who don't know a lot about what it's like to be in the cryptocurrency space, specifically being a trader, an investor in the cryptocurrency space. So why don't we start with how you first got into the cryptocurrency space?
Let's see. First hearing about it back in 2015, getting into it in 2016. Back then I had very little capital, so I was always looking for these insane moonshots. I always thought, Bitcoin could go up 5 times, that I would not be rich if it went up 5 times. I was always looking for these the next 1,000 times, next 2,000 times. It was an uphill battle because I didn't have the information, didn't have the connections, mostly just running around, buying the tops, getting dumped on.
So in 2016, you got into crypto. Walk us through that. I mean, how much money are we talking about? Where did you go to buy the crypto? I mean, you're 16, how much access did you have?
Yeah, back then, didn't even have a credit card or proper bank account for it. So went through PayPal, some sketchy service, $200, that's it.
$200 in 2016. And what was the first thing that you invested in at that time?
Bitcoin, of course, the gateway, only one I could buy with the servers I had. And from there, probably, moved around many times. Some notable things I bought were Chainlink and BNB.
Okay, so in 2016, you bought Bitcoin. Was the intention to have the Bitcoin, or was that purposefully just the middle step between other tokens?
It was definitely a middle step, as I said. I was looking for a get-rich-quick scheme.
So who gave you that insight at the age of 16 that this was something you should get into?
Must have heard it on Reddit or something. Don't know if there was a specific person telling me. You hear rumors on the news, internet, about Bitcoin pumping, breaking past $1,000, then eventually you FOMO in.
What, when it comes to the technology itself, was that something that ever kind of captured your attention, or was it just straight to the financial element?
Okay. Back in 2016, I did not understand the technology at all. I heard their marketing, how it was marketed as being decentralized and all that. I didn't understand what was going on. These days, I do have a pretty deep understanding of what it's all about. But back then, I was just reading to the hype.
And 2016 was right around the beginning of the 2017 bubble, right? That's when things were picking up. So you must have done quite well then in those months.
No, not at all. Barely did anything. I did not understand what I was getting into. I was like the retail buyer, just buying at the top after everyone loaded the bags. Yeah, just pumping other people's bags. It was not a good time for me.
I know that being in the space, we get a lot of terminology thrown around, but just for, you know, to play a bit dumb here, when you say pumping, you know, bags, buying at the top, can you just kind of walk people through what that really means?
So you buy something, you want to make a profit, right? So you buy a low, then wait for the hype to roll in, wait for some idiots who don't know what's going on. They buy your token, buy your coin, the price goes up. That's where you get your profit. You dump. Then people like me who bought at the top, we get burned.
And what does that mean? I guess you lose all your money if you buy at the top?
We buy tokens that lose value. So depends. Depends how you play it. Depends if you panic sell at the bottom. Depends if it recovers. Depends.
So did you know this in 2016, that this kind of like pump and dump nature of getting in and timing it and, you know, timing the hype? Did you know about this going in?
I had an idea, of course, but it's my first time investing in anything. Never bought stocks before. Never done anything with my money.
Did it ever occur to you as strange that this is the kind of financial game you're playing?
Strange. I didn't care about that. I just wanted to make some money.
For starters, typically in the stock market, people buy stocks and they hope that the stocks go up, but it's not necessarily the case that a stock will, you know, radically increase and then radically, you know, dump.
Right.
Often stocks can actually do well because the underlying, you know, company is really making something productive. Did that ever occur to you as like the reason why you would buy these tokens?
Back in the 2016, 2017 era, we had all these ideas about how all these blockchain networks would create real utility in the world. Back when it was all about like supply chains, verified data, even before decentralized finance, we all thought these projects actually had use. We thought eventually there's going to be a singularity and everything will be on the blockchain. Of course, I didn't understand blockchain back then, so it was very easy for me to fall for it.
It sounds like there is an element where you are buying a real stock, right? You feel that there's a company underneath that's going to do something valuable. Can you remember an instance of a token that really captured your attention in 2016, like, or 2017?
Got behind Chainlink a lot. And it's crazy because Chainlink is around today, but I didn't hold that long.
What does Chainlink do?
It's an Oracle service. Basically, its idea is it provides real-world information to the blockchain. And on its own, that isn't valuable. But we had all these ideas where we'd have all these other projects that would need information, and those projects would create value.
Okay, and so the idea was that if Chainlink offered a service to all these other products, that the token would go up in value.
Yes.
Okay. And how would that map? Like, did someone need to use the token for something, or?
No, I never understood the tokenomics behind Chainlink, and I still do not.
Tokenomics, and I'll just sort of explain this one, is just sort of the economics of the tokens, right? How the tokens feed the price to the other tokens. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, but it also includes things like how deflationary the tokens are, how they're released over time, things like that.
Released over time. What do you mean by that?
Tokens often, they increase in supply, you know, like Bitcoin being mined.
Right. So was Chainlink also mined?
No.
So who's releasing the supply of Chainlink?
Oh, they ran an ICO, initial coin offering. The company behind and the CEO of Chainlink, they held the majority of the tokens, just sold them over time. That's how they got the supply out there.
Right. So a lot of people that bought into Chainlink were at first funding the Chainlink team.
Yeah.
Were there any other tokens you recall in like 2017?
Other notable ones. I remember Walton Chain. Remember VeChain, still around today. Verge. Back when privacy coins were crazy, because we all wanted the use case of anonymous transactions. Still around today. Monero. The Zcash. Yeah. Then there were all those other payment networks. Request Network, for one.
Let's back up for just a second before we talk about all the different tokens. So you start off, you use PayPal to send a few hundred dollars in 2016 to invest in Bitcoin, which then allows you to get other tokens. Where are you getting other tokens?
Binance. It was always Binance.
So tell me a little bit about Binance. Why did you choose Binance?
I chose Binance because Chainlink was listed there, not anywhere else.
Chainlink was listed only on Binance.
Yeah, pretty much except for decentralized exchanges. I didn't really know how to use those, so I went to Binance. Then over time, their altcoin selection got better, stayed there.
So where is Binance? Is it in Canada then, or is it in the US?
Never knew. Binance, so some Chinese company. Their headquarters based in some island with no regulation. I never thought about it back then.
Did Binance ask you for banking information?
No, didn't ask for anything. I just deposited my coins, started trading.
And you said they had a lot of altcoin options. Would you say that Canadian exchanges or American exchanges would have the same amount of altcoin options?
For these altcoin markets, they were generally global, so you wouldn't have like Canadian exchanges. They'd just be global.
Right. When you're on this exchange, how are you trading? Are you holding coins for a long time? Are you doing things every day? What's the, you know, currency you're using? Is it US dollars or Canadian dollars? Do you ever sell into like the fiat money or?
Nah, back then I just traded between Bitcoin and altcoins.
I see.
And as for how long I would hold, my strategies were, as I didn't have a strategy. I was bound by my emotions. I was very impulsive with what I did.
Okay, so we're talking about a few hundred dollars worth. Did you make regular contributions? Like, did you put in more Bitcoin?
No, just kept writing that.
And so what happened, you know, as the bubble got hotter, what happened? I mean, you must have had more money overall.
I saw some small gains, but you know, $1,000, not much.
Right.
So I knew even at that age, it's not life-changing or anything. Barely even helped me.
Right. Okay. And so the bubble in 2017 came to an end in early 2018. What was that like?
For me, I barely even noticed it. As I said, I was not very successful at what I was trying to do. And I pretty much missed the entire bull run, as it were. I saw in the news everything was crashing. I held a little small bag of Chainlink and just pretty much abandoned crypto. Didn't look at it. Thought it was never coming back.
So you forgot about cryptocurrency and you had this small bag of Chainlink and you just, I guess, went back to, you know, your regular life.
Yeah.
When did crypto kind of pull you back in?
I think in 2019, I saw some things were pumping. I saw Chainlink pumped. I just sold it because it was so long since I had seen a profit that I couldn't help myself.
What did you sell it for?
Good question. I don't remember actually.
So did you make additional contributions to Binance?
No, never.
Never. Okay. We're jumping ahead and we'll get back to the earlier stuff. But tell me about how this money grew.
You mean in the past few months?
Yeah, like end of, you know, 2019. And I'm guessing you're talking about the second half of 2019, where you kind of got reintroduced. At what point did you start trading again?
Must have been winter 2020. So there was something that happened called the DeFi summer in 2020, where all these DeFi projects were apparently going crazy and people were reintroducing themselves to crypto. And I wanted to learn about it. I started watching videos about it.
So by DeFi, you mean decentralized finance?
Correct.
And what's that about?
There's this idea that the traditional finance system can be replaced by the blockchain using smart contracts. So we can replace the banks, replace payment system, replace investing.
What's a smart contract?
What is a smart contract? Set of instructions that are stored on the blockchain. They're immutable. Yeah, it's like a program on the blockchain.
Okay, and so you got excited about the DeFi summer. And so what did you do?
I missed out on the DeFi summer. I was picking up the scraps. I didn't do enough research, started just buying into the hype again, same old as always. Didn't go too well, but there was money really flowing in. And I think at a peak, I reached close to five figures. I was pretty hyped about that.
So $10,000.
Yeah, almost. 5 years of investing, a few hundred bucks to 10,000. I was like, okay, that's cool.
What kind of tokens got you to that 10,000 mark?
I think there was this token in e-commerce, basically would let you use crypto to buy things on Amazon, eBay. Went into that, made some money, bought some some coins for Polkadot. Heard they would, I didn't even research these things. I was into the hype again. I did not understand how they worked.
So Polkadot, some other things. Did you ever test the products themselves? Like if a token claimed that it was useful for something, did you ever try to use the tokens for anything?
For the first example that I gave, yeah, they had a working marketplace. So yes. Otherwise, they had no products. They was investing for when they would have a product.
They didn't have a product yet, but in the future, it would work. With the marketplace, did you buy something from Amazon or eBay?
No, it was never available in my country, but there were actively people I knew who were using it.
Right, so you knew someone that was using it, but you yourself hadn't used it.
Correct.
Is it useful now?
I believe people are still using it.
Okay, would you say that's a lot of people?
Decent amount, yeah.
Anyone who isn't familiar with cryptocurrency?
I don't believe so.
So in order to use the product, you would probably have to buy Bitcoin, send it to an exchange, exchange it for an altcoin, and then use that altcoin to make a purchase, correct?
You could use any coins, you know, any mainstream coin, lots of altcoins. That was a selling point. Don't know if it's actually useful to society in general, but it's a product.
Now, currently, are we still only talking about being on Binance?
No. As I said, after the DeFi summer, people started hyping up Uniswap and decentralized exchanges because this is part of decentralized finance. This idea that we have decentralized markets, automatic market makers, you know.
So the idea is that whereas an exchange is the one that manages all the orders and accounts, you're saying that DeFi is trying to bring this onto a blockchain where the blockchain allows for accounts and trades to happen without an exchange in the middle.
Right.
Okay. This is all happening on Ethereum, right?
Yes, Ethereum.
So how was it transitioning from Binance, which is an exchange, which I'm guessing is quite user-friendly, to Ethereum?
Personally, I like trading on Uniswap a lot more than on Binance. Must have just been a psychological thing for me because I liked just market buying things. While on Binance, I was competing with people who placed like well-informed limit orders, limit sells. The markets move differently. I can say that for sure.
On Uniswap, when you're making a purchase, it's instant. But on Binance, you have to place a limit order.
You know, you could market buy on Binance. It's just that you were competing with people who weren't doing that. While on Uniswap, there was pretty much people just buying at the price they saw. People wouldn't even look at charts mostly. It's pretty crazy.
And was there a big discrepancy between prices on Uniswap and Binance?
No, arbitrage. There is always someone who's going to do arbitrage to keep the prices stable, keep them matched.
Arbitrage traders are those who are noticing differences in prices across exchanges, so they're quickly moving coins from one exchange to the other.
Correct. Usually done using bots.
So it's 2020. The summer of 2020 just passed, and now it's late 2020.
Yeah, I started in winter 2020. I was not around for the summer.
Now it's, let's say it's November. What's happening in your life at this point?
At home, working at a grocery store during the day. Sometimes I just come home and look at crypto, see what's happening.
The crypto markets start rising quickly in October, November, December. How does that affect you personally?
I was thinking a lot about how if I had had actually made some gains during the last bull run, then I'd have something to pump right now, but didn't take it too seriously.
You felt bad that you didn't have more money to invest?
Yes, correct.
Okay. And at this point, are you still working at the grocery store?
Yeah, but not for long. December, I stopped. Not for crypto reasons. For coronavirus, and it's a convenient time to stop. I was going to get back into school, study stuff.
The new year comes around. Are you still at your five figures, your $10,000 worth?
Yeah, it's around where I started hitting those numbers.
Then January, February, March. Walk me through what's going on with you financially.
January, I felt like I misplayed everything again. I started going, just buying random shit on Uniswap that I'd heard about. I'd get dumped on, didn't do my research, started buying actual shitcoins before shitcoins were popular. So this is not the time to be buying shitcoins.
Charlie, when you say shitcoins and altcoins, so altcoins are coins that aren't Bitcoin.
Okay, so the way I see it, an altcoin is a coin that promises a project or a product, something that they think is going to create value. A shitcoin is something that does not. Something that it could be anything from a meme coin, something that anyone can see is not true value.
You distinguish them based on the fact that one is essentially not producing anything, and one is.
Right. It is important to note that I do not believe that crypto creates value. So it's about how they market it, how the investors see it.
You're saying that all cryptocurrency doesn't create value, but shitcoins don't have any project at all.
Correct.
So altcoins have a project. It's just that it's not creating value, but they at least claim they have a project.
Yeah, and this project could be just something that's interacting with the crypto space. So it could be great for the digital ecosystem, but what does that mean for the real world? Not much.
So let's talk about that. I mean, you've been in cryptocurrency for, 5 years. What is something that cryptocurrency has done that's improved your in a non-speculative or investment way?
The same thing as always, allows you to make anonymous transactions. I did that once. And yes, that involves the dark web. I'm not a huge user of it. That's its only use case, the way I see it. It doesn't have to be a speculative use case either. You can just get in and out by buy and sell.
The use case of anonymous payments online, in the dark web, is something that you didn't really use often. Maybe you used it a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
But compared to the payments you do normally, I'm guessing they amount to a very small size.
Yeah, almost nothing. My life would not be any worse if crypto was never invented.
Okay, but nevertheless, everyone in cryptocurrency is making a lot of money.
Yes. Money is flowing in at ridiculous rates, and people are being sold a dream of the future.
And you don't think this dream is going to be realized?
It's hard to say. In a way, speculative tokens like these allow us to give in to our greed. So even without a proper use case, who knows, maybe digital gold will just be the use case. That's not a product, but it'll happen.
So currently there must be something like 10,000 or 20,000 altcoins, and I'm guessing most of them you think are shitcoins. How many of them do you think would make sense for digital gold?
Well, here's the thing. At the heart of it, even Bitcoin is just a decentralized ledger. Its value to people who buy it is the fact that it'll go up. It's not the same as real gold, because there will always be only one real gold. Gold has a physical presence. It's literally an element. It has industrial uses. But the second Bitcoin becomes too bloated, the returns become too small, people are going to abandon it for the next digital ledger, because it's the same fucking thing, right?
So all of these are just placeholders for people playing with money. They're all just different placeholders.
Yeah, some of them have more history, better marketing, better adoption. But in the end, it's just a ledger. There's nothing behind it.
In the last few months, it seems like you became a bit more sophisticated with how you were trading, because you got to a point of $1 million. Walk me through some of the strategies, what you were doing, who you were talking to.
Yes. The biggest change I made was finally develop some contacts. I talked to people in crypto over the years. I never got close though. And in January, I made some friends, and that's where I started realizing how much value there was into talking with your inner circle, with your group of investors. So you could discuss projects, discuss what you're buying, discuss the market. You're alone. You can't do any of these. You're just bouncing ideas in your own head. It leads you in circles.
You're discussing cryptocurrency picks, right?
Yeah. And even then, we were still very amateurish.
What are some things you discuss? And how does it look like? How many people in this group? Where is this group?
No group right now. We would just DM each other, message each other, and share some stuff we saw on boards. We'd talk about what we saw whales buying, talk about opportunities we missed.
What does that mean, saw whales buying?
We'd see huge wallets buying huge amounts of some coin, and be like, okay, is this something we have to look into? Is this something where this whale, who obviously knows what he's doing, is making this huge play? And we consider it.
And who is revealing this to you, that a whale is buying?
Oh yeah, we see this in many sources. We see it on boards. We'd see it in wallets. We could check the wallets ourselves. We'd see it in Discord chats, Telegram. People just talk,
And so how does that 5 figures turn into 7 figures?
Well, that's a long jump, because everything changed. I changed my entire strategy.
So tell me about that.
So early February, I was getting very tired of crypto because it wasn't really going my way again. I was stagnating. I was even losing again. And then one of my friends, he talks to me about this thing called Binance Smart Chain. And at first I'm skeptical because I don't really understand what it is. He's saying it's something like Ethereum. I don't understand how you can make another Ethereum. Like, I'm retarded back then. I don't know what's going on. And then he tells me, at that point, we already know there's problems with Ethereum. There's, like, to pay gas, even then, it was like $40. And I thought that was ridiculous.
Sorry, Charlie.
Yes?
So Ethereum is the number two cryptocurrency, and it's the one that allows you to do these decentralized trades, right?
Correct.
In order to do that, you have to pay these minor fees that you call gas, right? The network calls it gas. So when you're committing these trades, you're paying some fee. It could be a cent, a dollar, or more. At this point, you're noticing that these fees on Ethereum are already going up.
Yeah. When we started back before in 2020, when I started, when I came back, the fees were pretty low still, maybe like a dollar. And I thought if it would go up to like $10 transaction fee, I was like, whoa, what's going on? And little did I know that it would get much worse from there. So it all ties into Binance Smart Chain. And he's telling me, my friend, my contact, is telling me he wants to invest in this. I don't even understand how you can invest in this. I didn't realize that it was just like Ethereum. There'd be this same minor fee. And then all of a sudden, there's all these DeFi clones popping up on the Binance Smart Chain.
So you have this Ethereum thing that's decentralized, right? It has some developers that are leading it, but it's not really owned or run by anyone. Then you have Binance Chain, which you say is like a copy of Ethereum, but it's named after an exchange. Why is it named after an exchange?
The best way to say it is the Binance Smart Chain is like an Ethereum testnet. So in practice, it's actually centralized, and that's how they can avoid all the fees.
It's kind of like this public ledger, but it's managed privately, but the ledger is public.
Yes, so no decentralization, but all the benefits of smart contracts, which means nothing really except no regulation.
So no regulation, low fees.
Yes, just a digital Wild West.
You were trading on Binance, you moved to Ethereum, now you move to the Binance Smart Chain.
Correct.
How would you say it's different being on a Binance Smart Chain and being on Binance in terms of a trading perspective?
Yeah, it would be the same thing as trading on Ethereum. Again, same thing as I said before. You're trading on a decentralized exchange using liquidity pools. No limit orders, nothing like that.
You mentioned at another point that there's also a Binance token. Can you talk about that?
The Binance token was released a long time ago, years ago when Binance started. Initially, it was just like stocks in the exchange and to pay fees. And they repurposed it into being the native token of their Binance Smart Chain network. You use it to pay fees. You use it to form liquidity pools. You use it to buy things on Binance, pretty much. On Binance Smart Chain, that is.
So the Binance token, would you say that that's a decentralized token, or is that like a direct token from the Binance company?
It's direct from the Binance company. And they also control the majority of the supply.
And what's interesting is that this Binance token is quickly gaining value. Very quickly, actually.
It was gaining value. Yeah, I saw it spike from, I remember seeing it at less than a dollar back in 2017. Saw it steadily rise to multiple dollars, to double digits. And when the Binance Smart Chain, it started to catch on, people started taking it seriously instead of thinking it's like a joke, thinking that why would you ever want to use a centralized Ethereum? The price starts spiking like exponentially.
So it's spiking exponentially. This is confusing to you.
No, it was not confusing to me. And surprisingly, I bought on the top of a spike and it paid off somehow.
You bought at the top of a spike?
Yeah, I saw it spike. And this is when my friend's telling me that he wants to invest. And I saw it just the price stabilizing around the top, not going down, not going up. Decided I just hop in.
Okay, so for context here, a year ago, Binance Coin was at $15.
Was it? Yeah. Okay.
On the 1st of February, it was already $50. Currently, Binance Token is at $600.
I'd say I got back into Binance. My first purchase back into Binance Coin was over $100. But I did not allocate much to it. I just wanted to get my feet in, test out the network.
So would you say Binance was something that grew your portfolio substantially, or was it something else?
My portfolio did not grow by holding Binance coins. My portfolio grew by accumulating Binance coins.
Okay, and how did you accumulate?
By flipping shitcoins.
Tell me about how that works.
So this is in the aftermath of when Dogecoin started reviving. So keep in mind, we saw this useless meme coin go from less like a fifth of a cent all the way up to like 9 cents before it before it started going back down. And we're starting to notice this market in shitcoins, meme coins. People just want get rich quick schemes. And if you're early enough, that's money for you, isn't it? On Ethereum, to buy these shitcoins, it's you're paying like $50 to buy and $50 to sell. And nobody wants to do that. So we saw some shitcoins on the Binance Smart Chain. We saw that maybe this is an opportunity.
So how did you find these shitcoins?
Initially, all the shitcoins would be posted on 4chan on the business board.
Okay.
That's how it all started. And everything was done through Telegram. Every coin would have its own Telegram. You need your own Telegram account pretty much to participate, to get your news, to figure out how to even buy this shit.
And Binance is providing all of it.
What do you mean by that?
The Binance Smart Chain allows you to get all of the shitcoins.
Yes, anybody could deploy a shitcoin on Binance Smart Chain for pretty much nothing. Was it like 10 bucks?
I'm trying to understand where and how you got lucky. Because the story here is that you had a few hundred dollars, and then in the last few weeks, you've had $1 million.
It was all volume and the market growing. So initially, these shitcoins we bought, they'd be in like hundreds of thousands of market cap or lower. And we were all very risk adverse. We didn't want to get dumped on. These things went up, they go back all the way down to zero, or close to zero, never zero. And remember my first flip, I made like $100. I didn't even double my investment. I was like, wow, this is lucrative. And I wasn't.
Let me just pause you there, Charlie. What you're saying is that you take these coins that are like penny stocks, right? They're very small. The market capitalization of these coins is like $100,000. So in total, there might be 50 people that have this coin in the entire world. They're brand new or they've been abandoned. Is that right?
Yeah. And you just hope you'd hope that another 100 people come in after you to buy. So you have a profit.
So are you kind of planting seeds by buying all of them? Like how much are you spending per coin?
Yeah. So as it started to pick up and people started making more shitcoins, we're having a lot of fun. We search out whatever was early, whatever had very little holders, even whatever just had a cool website and a community.
Why did the cool website matter?
Because it's a shitcoin. Everything, the only thing that matters actually is marketing. And if you're you can stand out the best, people buy. It was that simple.
At this point, you know that all these tokens are essentially they're garbage, right? They're not really making something useful.
Yeah, it's for fun.
You're not studying the code base or the technical aspects of it or investigating the business that they're trying to accomplish. This has just become kind of more of a roll of the dice.
Right. There was nothing to really study. So pretty much the basics of all these shitcoins, there was this one specific tokenomic scheme that they were all following. And that was the reflect mechanism, all the derivatives of it that came afterwards. What this meant was on every trade, every transaction, there would be a portion of your trade taken away from you and something would happen to it. Either it would be redistributed to other holders, or it would be burned to reduce the supply, or they'd use it to add liquidity. And people just, they copied it like 100,000 times or more, probably more.
So walk me through that. So I have a shitcoin, and what I'm doing is I'm trading it. And as I'm trading it, like moving it, what's happening is a part of it has to be burned or added to a liquidity pool. Like,
yes.
I'm a bit lost.
What are you lost on?
Well, so does that mean that if I have 100 tokens, I can't send someone 100? I can only send them 95?
Yeah, it would be something like that. You try to send them 100 tokens, and then they would only end up with 95. If the fee was 5%.
The idea here is to really disincentivize the movement of coins.
Right. They wanted you to be incentivized to just hold. This ties into what roped a lot of newcomers in, because they would see this mechanism. They would have never heard of it before. They would think, wow, this is kind of revolutionary. I can finance myself with this, because they're thinking, well, in a year, how many transactions are happening? And all these coins are getting added to my balance. Well, they'll think, okay, in a year, the returns may be like 50% or more.
The idea is I don't want to move my coins, because as everyone else moves their coins, the supply quickly goes down, or I get new supply because I'm holding.
That's right.
Now, this is like a misunderstanding, according to you, right? So what's really happening?
It's not a misunderstanding. It's just a gimmick. It's a con. Because in the end, they're still just worthless tokens. And you have to find someone who's willing to buy them off you. And the way it is, these mechanisms, these reflex mechanisms, they don't perform well in the long term. They get outperformed by just speculating on the price and dumping on people who fall for it.
Because these mechanisms might work if we're talking about a legitimate system that has growing users, but really they're just there to attract a pool so that people can quickly dump and make a profit and move on.
Right.
And this repeated over and over and over again.
Yeah, to an unbearable degree, because, you know, my first week there, I thought, if people clone this thing 5 times, okay, now it's going to get old, because we've all seen it already, right? And we're going to learn our lesson. Nobody's going to buy this shit that doesn't do anything. But what happened was it just got worse. People made, instead of like 5 clones a day, we started seeing like 20, 30 clones a day, and they were all the same thing, just with new branding, new memes. Maybe like they changed a few numbers in the contract, different marketing.
They're all shit coins that are going to pump and then dump.
Yes.
So why aren't people learning their lesson? I mean, it seems like most people lose, right? So how can people continue to lose?
For one thing, the amount of money flowing in far outstripped the amount of money that was being drained for profit. So it was actually pretty hard to lose because there were other people looking in, seeing Binance Smart Chain, seeing people gambling on shitcoins, and they wanted a part of it. And they would jump in and add their money to the pool, and the Ponzi would keep going up and up.
It seems like because you were in there early, you got to see as a lot of new people showed up and kind of relearned the lessons that you had learned earlier.
Right, but they weren't really learning the lesson. They were just getting into it. And even if they would lose, it looked like they were getting more addicted to this gambling thing.
So the people that you got to meet virtually, and I know that you didn't meet any of them in a meaningful way. It was always with, I'm guessing, some sort of pseudonym or on a first name basis.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you never met them physically in any way.
Correct.
Did they lose a lot of money? Did you see people firsthand? And what did that look like?
No. For us, for the insiders, we're not going to lose money. We're not here to lose money. We're here to take money from other people.
So how do you know that you're the insiders?
We'd see patterns in coins. We'd see things were early enough. We'd manage our risk, try not to FOMO into stuff.
What does that mean, FOMO into stuff?
FOMO stands for fear of missing out. It's this very prevalent psychological mechanism in crypto where you see something pumping and you can't help yourself but just buy in at the top because you're like, I've missed out so much, I can't miss out more. And that is where all the suckers come in.
If a coin was pumping, going up quickly, you wouldn't jump in.
Yeah, we tried to refrain from doing that.
What percent of people do you reckon do well on the Binance Smart Chain shitcoin flipping game?
It's hard to say.
Let me ask another way. Where do you think your $1 million comes from?
Oh, from other people, from their retirement savings, their life savings. Just idiots who put their money into shitcoins as their financial plan. And the losers definitely outnumber the winners by a vast margin, but it's hard to estimate how many.
Did you ever hear the stories of people who lost a lot of money?
All the time. As I said, we'd all do this in Telegram, and even the new people, they'd be in the Telegram too, and they'd be hyping up their coin, saying, talking about what they're going to buy with the money when they're rich. They're buying into the hype, but then eventually, you know, it'd go down because people are taking profit, but they didn't take profit because they weren't in profit in the start, and they were still losing a lot. A lot of people were only gambling with small stacks, right? Just like us, like me. I didn't put that much into Binance Smart Chain. I was there for fun. But eventually, we started to see people who were going like deep in these things. We would see people who put in like $20,000. Like, what's going on, right? And these people, they would know nothing about what's going on. They think, I put in $20,000, this coin's going to triple and I can make an easy 40K. But then it wouldn't happen that way. And you'd see them in the Telegram, like complaining pretty much, crying about what happened. They'd be asking when the price would go back up. They'd be asking if it was a scam or why people were dumping. And there would be no real response other than other bag holders asking them not to sell, to hold the line, as they say. And saying, don't have weak hands, and in a year, who knows where the price could be. But it was always very depressing to watch that.
What do you think of that advice to hold the line, you know, strong hands, wait a year? What do you think about that kind of advice?
Like, I absolutely despise people who say that. It's just very, very embarrassing thing to say, because it's either something has value or it doesn't. If you need to hold the line in order for it to have value, it's not, it doesn't speak well for what you're buying, does it?
I just want to ask you about something that you said here. You said, no matter where you look at it, it's still a degenerate zero-sum game. Pumping the price of worthless tokens and selling to people who are...
So if you're not producing anything with these coins, there's not any goods or services being created. How can it be anything but a zero-sum game? And if you account the amount of scams, like outright scams, not just shitcoins, the ones that literally scam you, where you can't sell, things like that. If you account for gas fees, if you account for the developers taking their cut, it's a negative sum game, actually.
And sorry, I was just quoting what you had written in the past. It sounds like exactly that. You're saying that these shitcoins are, and these are your words here, unashamedly only exist to pump and enrich early holders. And almost everyone who buys them knows that. So at this point, it seems like you have this interesting phenomenon where almost no one believes that this is useful, except maybe the retirement individual who brings in the 50,000 at the very end with high hopes and loses it all. I mean,
yeah, at this point, most of the people in the Binance Smart Chain were just veterans from Ethereum. They knew what was going on. So we're just having some fun. And eventually some guy, some idiot with $20,000 would come in and pump all our bags, and we make a profit.
This is getting progressively worse. I mean, is it fair to say that this phenomenon is continuing on, and not less so than a few months ago?
Yeah, it's exploding.
So
before shitcoins started getting huge, like huge on and mainstream on Binance Smart Chain, we did have like a couple, like a few weeks where everyone thought it was going to be all about DeFi, decentralized finance. We're going to have all these applications. All gonna go crazy. But what really ended up happening is we had a bunch of Ponzi schemes, yield farms that did nothing.
Tell me about yield farm.
Yeah, yield farms. So pretty much there'd be a platform and they'd have a system where you'd farm a token that they release. And this token would have no value other than the fact that you could use that token itself to farm even more of that token. So it was like a very circular, self-sustaining Ponzi scheme. And for a few weeks, this was very, very big. This was much bigger than shitcoins because people thought it was DeFi. People thought it was real finance, but it's not.
And why wasn't it real finance?
Because it doesn't create any value. It's just people moving money around to enrich, again, the people who got in early. And if you were one of the suckers who bought the token like late, and that gives an opportunity for the early investors to cash out, liquidate the position.
Let's kind of go back to really hitting that $1 million. Like, walk me through when you crossed six figures, 100,000.
It all started with this famous shitcoin called SafeMoon. And before the SafeMoon season, I was low five digits, even after all this gambling. And then suddenly this coin called SafeMoon just pops out of nowhere. Just smashes all boundaries and starts getting actual like mainstream attention. Like, people on Twitter are talking about it. There are influencers talking about it. And I didn't actually buy any of this. But what I did do was I saw the trend happening, and there were literally dozens of clones of SafeMoon coming out every day. And I decided to get in early on those.
How is SafeMoon different as a cryptocurrency?
So SafeMoon is just another shitcoin where, as I said, they're using the Reflect mechanism. And they had it's not their own idea. They cloned it from some older Ethereum projects, but they had this mechanism where on every trade, not only would there be distributed reflected tokens on as a fee, they'd also add some to liquidity. And that would create, like, as they say, a rising price floor, which isn't completely true.
What is a price floor?
As they say, if there's more liquidity, then there's more money for you to cash out. And it's harder for someone to just nuke the price all the way down to zero.
Every time someone's trading, a bit of this trading is essentially fueling the buy side. Is that correct?
It goes into liquidity.
What does that mean, liquidity?
So when you're selling in a decentralized exchange, you're interacting with a liquidity pool. For example, if you had a million tokens worth a dollar each, but there's only $100,000 in liquidity, you're not going to get $1 million out of it.
You're going to get $100,000 at most.
Yeah, less than that too.
Because of slippage, the price will drop as you're selling.
Yeah, exactly.
So these liquidity pools are essentially trying to keep the price from slipping.
Yeah. And it's interesting to note that SafeMoon was not actually the first project to do this on Binance Smart Chain. It was just the first one to do this with good marketing.
So tell me about the good marketing.
They had a very modern site. They started reaching out to like actual influencers, YouTubers, Twitter influencers. That's in the short term. And eventually, actual celebrities and who had their faces revealed and everything. It was ridiculous. Like Twitter and YouTube. And that itself was pretty big for a shitcoin, because to get an influencer to shill a shitcoin, that they're putting their reputation on the line. But not only that, they started getting actual celebrities, people with their faces out there, to shill these things.
So before, shitcoins, they hid behind a website. There weren't any faces front and center.
Yeah, nobody wanted to reveal who they were if they're making a shitcoin. Because then the people who got dumped on, they come after them.
But now you're saying, as things heat up, some of these marketing teams on these shitcoins are actually convincing real public figures, YouTubers, Instagram celebrities, that type of stuff, to go and...
Yes, and a lot of these people that they got on board were people who target the youth. So to give an example, I believe both Keemstar and Jake Paul had posted endorsements of SafeMoon. Direct endorsements where they told people to buy, told people to not get left behind.
Keemstar and Jake Paul.
Yes.
Jake Paul was telling people to not get left behind and get into SafeMoon.
Yes, and I believe it was Keemstar was talking about SafeMars, another clone of SafeMoon.
Where were they saying this?
They would make posts on Twitter.
Are those posts public,
yeah,
do you think? Currently, are they available?
Yes, I believe so. I don't know how to find them now, but don't think they'd be hard to find. It's not like they retracted their statements or anything.
What do you think about this? I mean, do you think they knew what they were doing?
I think it was very absurd, because you're actively advertising a Ponzi, a get-rich-quick scheme, and there's no repercussions either, because their followers obviously didn't care. They just wanted to get rich.
So when they promoted these things, what happened when those things collapsed? Inevitably, they dumped, because they don't pump for long. What happens when they dump?
Well, thing is, they haven't completely collapsed yet. So we'll see. The shitcoin market right now is still going strong. It's pretty insane. But in the meantime, you still get these huge, huge dumps before they recover. You would see like negative 70%, negative 80%. And you get a lot of people. It's bad, because a lot of these people get thrown into a very vicious cycle where they buy at the top, they get dumped on. And then they sell at the bottom, right? And like, why not? You're selling this shitcoin that does nothing. Makes sense. But then the whales who sold at the top would buy back when it's really low. And you see the price going back up. And these noobs, they'd buy back in again. They just keep funneling their money back into the system. Slowly, their portfolio bleeding away and enriching these people who knew what's going on.
All of this is very much like an elaborate, like, casino-type game.
Yes, except it's worse than a casino, because it's a con.
Right. It's a con. I just did a cursory search for Jake Paul, and I see a tweet from him on March 27th that says, "Everyone needs hashtag SafeMoon, or this will be you." And then there's a chart, an upwards to the right chart, and he shows a picture of a boxer crying. And I'm guessing it's someone in the UFC that he's trying to harass at the same time as in encouraging young kids to buy SafeMoon. So has SafeMoon done very well since March 27th?
SafeMoon, I think it exploded in price since then. Apparently reached the market cap above 10 billion. It was insane. So yes, the people who got in on Jake Paul's call, If they went in right at that time and sold at the top, they would have made money.
Okay.
It did collapse after that. And yeah, lots of people got burned.
I mean, I do see that, you know, he did cause it to rise. I also see that there was a huge spike about a month later and then a collapse.
Yeah, and part two is happening now. People are jumping back in. It's crazy.
So going back to you, something about this story seems tough to understand. Because you went from low five figures to six figures in a very short amount of time. I'm struggling to believe just how you did, because it seems like you nailed it with the right calls.
Okay, so what we were doing is we were looking to absolutely anything that was being launched. So everything's on Telegram. So we have our networks. We can just find literally everything. And when I say there are 100,000 shitcoins, I'm not exaggerating. So what we would do is we'd look into like anything that was halfway decent looking and just buy at the start. I mean, it's that simple actually. And I didn't have these ideas where any one of these coins would make me $1 million. I just thought if I can make $1,000 doing nothing, that's great. But what happened is this would happen like multiple times a day. And as time went on, the profits just increased. And as my portfolio grew, the amount of money I was willing to risk grew as well.
For the audience, how many tokens do you think you've touched, that is, bought or sold or held?
That's probably around 1,000.
1,000 tokens.
Yes, and 99% of them are shitcoins. Yeah, complete shitcoins.
99% are complete shitcoins. So you would say maybe 10 of them are legit?
Well, you get the occasional thing, some coin that's trying to be like a platform. Like you invest in the coin, the token of the decentralized exchange. There'd be coins where they try to make it like an NFT platform. And whether or not that counts as a shitcoin is debatable.
Well, let's talk about NFTs, because I have a lot of friends and they ask a lot about NFTs. And that's kind of a recurring question. Like, are NFTs a good idea? So I'm curious, because you've seen front and center the Binance Smart Chain scam, or the system of scams, right? These pump and dumps, these yield farm techniques, these redistribution mechanisms. I think you even gave it a name, and I just want to make sure I have that here. The reflect mechanism.
The reflect?
Yeah. Why is it called that, the reflect mechanism? Where did that come from?
It's called the reflect because the first coin to come up with this idea was called Reflect Finance.
I see.
So as for NFTs, I don't see NFTs the same way as shitcoins. I literally just ignore them. I don't see a future for them. I don't see people making money off them. I don't even see a way I can make money off them. It's just, I see it very similar to fine arts in the real world, where there's a lot of wash trading. There's a lot of selling to suckers directly.
What do you think an NFT is in terms of value that it provides to people?
NFTs are just another thing you can speculate on, because they do not actually represent real ownership in anything other than like you donated to the artist. So now they'll say thank you and give you a token that does nothing. And maybe if you meet them in the streets, they'll say, oh yeah, you own this, you own my art, but it doesn't amount to anything.
You're aware of the system of scams on the Binance Smart Chain. Would it surprise you if I told you that the NFT marketplace had a different but also very similar system of scams? It's just that it looks different than what you are familiar with. Would that surprise you?
No, not at all.
What it looks like we have in the crypto space is different mechanisms for playing on human psychology. And you write a lot about this. This seems to be kind of a pressing thing for you, which is that it really upsets you how human psychology is being manipulated by this space.
Yeah, and I also experienced that. The problem of crypto is, even if you say it's gambling, the effect it has on the human mind is very different. Because let's take the lottery, for example, like literally any average person who's not an idiot will just ignore the lottery, and they'll never think about it. And if they know that someone's going to win, they say, oh, he got lucky, congrats to him. But the thing is, cryptocurrency is more like a con, because the people who win, they can act like they got in early and they won because they were smart, because they were faithful, or they had the confidence or whatever. And that plays on you, because you can't just say, oh, he got lucky, even though it's just gambling, even though it's a shitcoin that does nothing. And it hurts, because I see everyone falling for it, and myself too. I feel these psychological effects every day, especially staying in the space for so long.
The lottery is very different than cryptocurrency. I think I have to agree with you. With a lottery, we accept that lottery winners just got lucky. And we know that on average, it's a bad idea to play the lottery. But in crypto, there's this underlying sort of feeling behind everyone's mind, which is that there's actually something magical about this space. And so there's a justification, some technical, magical guru computer science we call the blockchain that might change the world. And in that sense, we could all be winners. And this is, I'm guessing, where the human psychology plays in.
The marketing of crypto has been very successful in doing that, where they're convincing people that the fiat dollar system has problems. Well, I agree, it does have problems. And people are thinking, okay, now fiat is doomed. I need to get all my money into cryptocurrency. And I don't want to get left behind, because what's going to happen if cryptocurrency becomes the future and I'm holding fiat? It's going to be worthless. This is this idea that goes into everyone's mind. And every time they see the price go up, that makes them panic a little bit more. And it becomes a self-perpetuating loop. They just FOMO in, and their emotions get the better of them.
Charlie, you know, I've never met you in person, at least not knowingly. You know, I'm in Vancouver. I have no idea where you are. But we're both in Canada. Do you see cryptocurrency being widely adopted in commerce? For example, at your grocery store, on Amazon, at, I don't know, a bar, wherever you may be, are you observing a rapid increase in the adoption of cryptocurrency?
I am not observing people using cryptocurrency in day-to-day things, except mostly people who already have cryptocurrency for speculative purposes. They want to spend it without cashing out. And that's usually because of tax reasons.
To your view, really the only people that are going to buy something online with cryptocurrency are just doing it because they're already in the space and they don't want to pay taxes necessarily, and it just happens to be a convenience because of the friction going in and out of crypto. Is that fair to say?
Mostly, yes. There are also some sites that only take cryptocurrency. Those are also for legal reasons.
Right.
Not good ones.
Right. For example, darknet markets, which I'm very familiar with, you know, in my work and like forensics context.
Yeah.
People are terrified that they're going to miss the boat and that fiat is going to collapse. Fiat money like Canadian dollars, US dollars.
Right.
Now, if I told you, Charlie, that electric cars are going to take over the world one day, you would probably believe me.
Would I? Well, maybe. Yeah. Okay.
When you go outside, you see electric cars. They're not everywhere, but they're starting to appear more and more, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So do you think there are as many places and as many examples of cryptocurrencies being used as there are examples of electric cars?
It's still pretty much just speculation in the end. People aren't really using these as proper currencies. And the ones who do are usually using systems where they automatically convert to fiat just for convenience, you know?
I mean, would there be any problems with using most of these cryptocurrencies for business?
Instability, pretty much, volatility. Everybody thought Bitcoin was the ultimate store of value, going to 100,000, and recently it's been volatile as always. That doesn't help you when you're in a business. You need your things planned out. You need things to be stable.
Tell me how fiat is, and this isn't what I think you believe. Tell me what people think fiat is failing in, that crypto is doing well. Like, where is fiat collapsing right now?
I'd say the biggest thing would be, since it's all the supply of money is controlled, they manipulate the price, the supply of money to suit whatever they need. And they being the Federal Reserve, the people lobbying, the banks. So one thing that was big a long time ago, like last decades, people were complaining about bailouts. I agree with them. They have this idea that things were too big to fail. And a lot of early Bitcoin adopters were libertarians who really disagree with that. And you can't really do bailouts with a cryptocurrency system because you can't change the code, right?
And the problem with the bailout is helping the rich with the money of the middle class and the poor.
Yeah, and also rewarding their irresponsible behavior, making it okay to just pretty much go apeshit with their money, just go give into greed.
But going apeshit with their money and giving into greed is precisely what you have written cryptocurrency has enabled.
Correct. So we're replacing this fiat system where we're greedy with a system where we're even more greedy.
Would you say one is obviously worse?
I'd say crypto is worse just because deflation itself is a problem. So, for example, do you really want a world where people are just hodling coins to quit their job? And, you know, people saying, that this currency is just going to go up and up. So why would you ever sell? Obviously, this won't be as bad once it stabilizes, but the same market, the same supply and demand problem will happen. There's no inflation.
If the coin goes up, it's deflationary. This you don't think is a good idea, and most economists would agree with you.
Right. The problem is you're investing in a currency, and that itself is backwards because the entire point of inflation is to incentivize you to invest in real things, invest in the market. So your money is actually doing something productive. Sitting on currency doesn't do anything.
You know, whatever problems fiat currencies have, at least they meet the bare minimum criteria of having that fundamental use of being good currencies.
Correct.
Low inflation, stability, ease of use, ease of transfer, simplicity, privacy, these type of things. Cryptocurrency doesn't meet even that minimum criteria.
Yes, and that's why they started changing their ideas from being a currency to a store of value. And that was very shocking to me.
Why was that shocking to you?
In the early days, they were talking about how it's all about peer-to-peer transactions being a proper currency, something that the government can't touch, right? And people were talking about how there'd be like global marketplaces all about these cryptocurrencies. And in recent years, it's just shifted to pumping the price as much as you can. As deflationary as you can get, the better.
Where is this space going? I mean, right now, we're at all-time highs, almost across the board. Bitcoin's a bit down from its 60,000 all-time high. Ethereum is a bit down from its $4,500 all-time high. But more or less, we're at all-time highs right now. Do you reckon it goes higher?
I cannot say for sure. I think it does. It could grow. I don't want it to grow. I would much prefer if crypto would just crash to zero and never recover, even if that meant that I lost money.
Let's talk about your money. And I know you've said that you have some intention, if you were to sell, to pay the taxes and meet all your legal requirements and reach out to an accountant and get help because it seems reasonable. But currently, all of your gains, where is your money now? Like, do you still have cryptocurrency now?
Oh yeah, I have some left. Mostly just trying to realize my gains into real money, put into the real markets, using stable coins for now until I can figure out an exit plan.
I see. And is it difficult pulling out of the market now, knowing that it could go higher tomorrow?
Yeah, it's very difficult. And I do reckon it'll probably go higher just because there's so much momentum. People are so conditioned to just keep buying the dip. And yeah.
Your hope at one point you write here that it's all so tiresome, but I've come to realize it might not ever end, bar a government ban. Do you think it makes sense that the government were to ban this? Is that something you'd recommend someone in the government to do?
I don't know that they can, but I'd be pleasantly surprised if they could. And not just for the reasons of decentralization, but crypto also has the use case of being used to avoid taxes, as I've said, and that directly interferes with society, interferes with the government, you know? So eventually they're going to have to take action.
Do you see yourself going back into crypto at any point in the future?
I see myself keeping up the news, seeing if there really is some value. Who knows? Can't predict the future. Maybe one day when the markets are more regulated, when people start waking up and not buying into obvious Ponzi schemes, maybe I'll make a return.
One thing that I wanted to ask more of from our past discussion is just more about anything that you think that you have seen that to you is either a red flag or something distasteful. I wanted to get more of a sense of Telegram chats, you know, people who create and encourage pump and dump scams. I'm curious if there's anything else you think that people who have no idea what's going on, who are the noobs, who are likely to buy in and lose everything. Is there anything else you want to share in terms of your like experience in the space?
It's hard to say because predicting the top of everything is very difficult. You just need to remember that in the end, even if you do make a profit, you're just pretty much stealing from other people. So you got to put that in your conscience as well. I had to accept that as well. And if you want to play the casino, it's still your choice in the end. But you're competing with people who know what's going on, who've been in the space for years to months to years. They know what's going on. They have the inside information. They know when the top is, and they're going to dump on you. Do you think you can compete with that? Sure, some people will get lucky. They'll win anyway, even if they don't know what they're doing. But at the same time, you could ruin your life doing this.
How do you feel about the fact that some guy, for example, with a wife and kids, who felt that this was the way to make money, lost his money in a coin that you happened to have profited from, and thereby transferred that wealth in this game, this virtual scam?
Yeah, I got to do a bit of mental gymnastics on this one, but the way I see it is, I'd rather, if they're going to lose their money to some scammers anyway, I'd rather the money go to me than those scammers who created the coin. Because I'm not trying to create more of these scams. I'm not trying to advertise them or perpetuate them. And I think it's very sad because I see the stories at the end. Don't get me wrong, I'm greedy as well. I'm taking this fucking profit.
What would you do if you knew a person who was a scammer, like who had created one of these shitcoins? I know you never have participated in the creation or marketing or promotion of these, but...
Of course, I've talked to these people, and as part of my insider information I get, I gotta follow them around and drain money out of their projects. And I just see them as other people in the space. It's the Wild West, and they're doing what they can to make money as fast as they can.
Now, do you feel that by participating alongside of them, that you're sort of pumping the coin harder with them?
Not exactly. If I exit with a profit, I'm actually draining money out of it. That creates less profit for them.
You think that by participating in it, you're reducing their profit overall?
Yes, as long as I drain the money instead of, you know, getting dumped on myself. This only works if you're getting in early, like the way I've been saying. And you can actually kill a lot of coins by just dumping so hard that the momentum dies and nobody cares anymore.
I think we may have talked about this briefly. Have you heard of the story of Bernie Madoff?
Yeah, I'm a young guy, so I wasn't really alive for that. I wasn't alive to learn about it, but I read up on it. Know the basics.
So one of the issues was that he had this Ponzi scheme, but what really allowed him to get away with it all and what allowed it to live longer is the fact that other banks that didn't in fact themselves create the Ponzi bought into it and then, you know, built their own hedge funds with Bernie Madoff's hedge fund inside of theirs to kind of boost their profits. Do you think those banks that were quiet and bought into Bernie Madoff's hedge fund, do you think that they did the right thing, in a way draining money out of Bernie Madoff?
Don't know if I have the experience to answer that, because it's not like banks were in there for the long term, you know? They thought it was like they weren't doing quick flips. They weren't trying to kill it. Again, I'm not going to try to pretend I had a moral side to this. I'm still just as bad as many of these people.
See, the thing with you, Charlie, is that I think you genuinely didn't want to participate in something bad. It's just that you discovered it was more and more bad as time went on, and it wasn't clear.
Right, as I said, it started as like a fun thing. And then I always had my like financial goals, right? And I thought, maybe one day I'll get a big win, right? And one day I did get a big win, and I was ready to just quit there. I was like, okay, I'm done. I don't have to do this degenerate stuff anymore. But the next, like, just in a few days, it started ramping up bigger and bigger. I was like, I can't miss out on this. What if I get left behind? But that wasn't the top either. It just started growing exponentially until it's where it is now.
The result of the Bernie Madoff situation was that after all of the quick wealth and the excitement from all the people that were in his hedge fund and all of the millionaires and success stories, one day, you know, $60-65 billion was lost in an instant overnight. And it was everyone from lower class, middle class, even upper class folks. Quite a few people killed themselves, like immediately after finding out that this fund, which lasted 20 years, was vaporware. You know, learning about the story of Bernie Madoff, do you feel similar concern about what could happen in the cryptocurrency space?
Yeah, I think it's terrible because these are everyday people that are getting in, and you can't ignore that there's a huge amount of money being put into this. It's a gigantic transfer of wealth. So when the money disappears, it doesn't just vanish into thin air. It's actively impoverishing these people who don't know how to be responsible with their money, mostly poor people. They're putting their life savings in, they're not going to get it back. And it's going to go to these early crypto adopters.
So Charlie, I'm going to ask you one last question. And I don't know anything about your family, so I'm just giving you a hypothetical. If an uncle, a grandpa, a grandma, someone in your family that is old enough to have money comes to you and says, Charlie, I'm so excited. I just invested in, you know, Binance token or this token or that token. How would you react?
Fuck. I wouldn't be comfortable with any of my family going so much into cryptocurrencies. And a lot of it comes down to the psychology of it. I don't see it as a good investment, but if it gives you peace of mind, just buy a little bit. Just keep a small bit in your portfolio and you can stop thinking about it then. But I'd be very worried if people are putting their life savings in, and it would make me very sad. So I don't want the world to keep going this way.
So if your grandmother or uncle said he invested $50,000 and it dipped briefly to $30,000, what would you tell them to do?
That's a hard one. I wouldn't like giving financial advice like this in the first place. It'd just be, I don't know if I'd say anything at all. Might even play dumb because you never know of these things. I might say just sell, and then it rebound a bit. He would have been able to exit with no losses, and he'd blame me.
One part of it that's really tough is that it seems like even though you know that these shitcoins aren't legitimate, and it's why you and others call them shitcoins, it's hard to tell someone to sell. Because if it pumps, and we know that anything can pump very hard in this space, it feels like you've made a terrible financial decision, given bad advice. Is that how you feel?
That's correct. And I believe that's why a lot of people are unable to speak out against cryptocurrencies. Because if they do, there's like an army of people saying, well, this is really bad financial advice. They're saying like, well, you called crypto a scam at 30K, now it's 60K. I mean, Bitcoin, you know, and they're saying you're an idiot. You could have just, like, your followers could have been so much richer if they didn't listen to you, right? And there's this cult-like mentality. So even if the fundamental value is zero or close to it, the speculative value is still what people see. That's your profit.
Okay. Well, on that note, Charlie, I have to thank you for sharing everything that you've shared so far. And we'll see, maybe there's an opportunity for some additional follow-up questions at a later time. Is there anything else you want to say? Just last final words.
Man, I hope the trend doesn't continue this way, because I'm seeing patterns emerge where it looks like this is becoming something like a national pastime for the youth, where they're replacing video games, replacing gambling, sports, with speculating on digital tokens. It's pretty widespread, very popular, and they have the narrative behind them for this. And what's stopping them, right? Currently, you know, government's handing out money to Canadians and Americans. They're getting a bunch of money to play with, and we're in lockdown. It's like everything's going digital now. Makes me a bit sad for the future. Anyways, nothing I can do about it. I'll have to live with it. It's crazy.
Okay. Well, on that note, I can't thank you enough for what you're doing, and I'm hoping that this will be useful for someone else in the future.
Thanks for having me. It's been great. It's been nice to tell my story, get this off my chest.
Awesome.